The meeting will come to order, Education Innovation Policy, January 19. And welcome everyone this morning. The clerk has noted that we have a quorum present. Representative Grassl, have you looked at the minutes, and would you kindly move approval?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to approve the minutes.
Representative Grassl moves approval of the minutes from January 17. Are there any corrections or additions? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. And members and those in the audience, I want to announce that yesterday baby Luca arrived. That's Tom Brennan's son. He and his wife are the proud parents now of Luca. And 27 hours of labor. So when Mr. Brennan returns, have a little time to convey your support, because I think he finally told me late yesterday afternoon he was recovering in the recovery room.
Yeah.
He was recovering, yes.
Yeah.
And I remember those days, so those are tough for mom and the new dad. This is all very exciting for us, but we want to also lend a lot of support to Mr. Brennan and his wife and new baby Luca. Today we're going to take a look at the audit done of Purpich Center for Arts, the program evaluation, as well as the financial audit. These are two that were part of the 2016 requests from the legislature to the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And we have many of our auditors in the audience today. These are from this nonpartisan Office of the Legislative Auditor here in the state of Minnesota, who do this work for us to make sure there are checks and balances, and that what is supposed to occur under the leadership of the legislature and otherwise is occurring. And I want to recognize them. And so, Jim Nobles, you're in the audience. You are our leader. If you would stand. And then would the other auditors please stand and say your name? And maybe if you have an assignment other than the one that we're going to hear from today. So please stand, please.
I'm Sonia Johnson, audit manager.
I'm Jody Martin Rodriguez. I'm with the Program Evaluation Division.
Gail Foreman, I was the auditor in charge of the summit.
Gabriel Johnson, I worked on the financial audit.
I'm Heather Rodriguez, and I also worked on the financial audit.
And then at the table?
I'm Joel Alter with the Evaluation Division.
Good morning. I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division.
Good morning. I'm Judy Randall, the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Program Evaluation Division.
And all total, Ms. Randall, how many do you have on staff?
Chair, we have 15 program evaluators and 35 financial auditors.
Very good. Thank you so much. So, members, these are the hard workers who prepare these audits, who do the research, both financial and program. So they are to be recognized today as we look at this very important audit of the Purpich Center for the Arts. So to begin our presentation today, we'll have Ms. Randall, who is the from the Office of the Legislative Auditor and Assistant to the Auditor. So welcome, Ms. Randall. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Again, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. And thank you for taking the time today to hear both our program evaluation and financial audit related to the Purpich Center. This is the release of the report, so it's the first time it's becoming public. As you likely know, the Purpich Center is kind of a unique state agency. When it was created in 1985, it provided statewide arts education outreach. In the late 1980s, it began operating its arts high school, which is located in Golden Valley. And then in 2013, it began operating the Crosswinds Middle School in Woodbury. So it has statewide outreach responsibilities, but it also has specific responsibilities related to operating two schools. Now, 2 days ago, I met with this committee, and I'm happy to be here again. But 2 days ago when we spoke, I told you that we talked about Minnesota teacher licensure, and at that time I said it was unusual for our office to release findings and a report that was so strong and had so many findings. Unfortunately, we are here again with a similarly strong report. It's another report with broad and significant concerns, but this time now about the Perpich Center for Arts Education. As Mr. Alter will tell you, we found significant problems with the board oversight. We found significant problems with the agency leadership and management. The schools have poor test scores, and there's declining enrollment. In other words, we found a lot to be concerned about. As you may know, the executive director of the Perpich Center retired earlier this month. However, the findings that we're going to report didn't leave with her. Instead, they remain for the board, the new director, and you, the legislature, to address. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn first to Mr. Alter, who will provide an overview of the findings and recommendations related to the evaluation, and then Ms. Ferkel will follow up with the findings and conclusions related to our financial audit. Again, thank you for hearing the reports today.
And members, you have at your places both the program evaluation and the financial evaluation. The program evaluation is the larger report, so you might want to have that readily available. We also have a PowerPoint before us. Welcome, Mr. Alter. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Joel Alter, and I was the manager of the evaluation portion of this review. And again, I want to acknowledge Jody Munson-Rodriguez, who worked with me on the evaluation part of this. As Judy said, the Perpich Center is a relatively small agency. It has about 100 employees. It has a budget, an annual budget of roughly $11 million. But in response to concerns raised about the agency in recent years, we took a pretty in-depth look at this agency and the agency's leadership and certain aspects of its operations. Overall, what did we conclude in this evaluation? Well, our report says that the Perpich Center's governing board has not provided the agency with enough direction and oversight, and the board has not been sufficiently transparent and accessible to the public in its activities. Our report says there has been widespread concern about the agency's administrative leadership, which has contributed to a morale issue at the agency. We'll talk in a moment about the two schools the Perpich Center operates, but we concluded that one of those schools, called Crosswinds, has struggled during its time under Perpich Center management. And we found that the agency has fulfilled some, but not all, of the requirements in statute for the agency to provide statewide outreach to schools related to arts education. I want to begin with a little bit of background before we discuss our findings. And first, I want to begin with an overview of the agency's main areas of responsibility. First, the agency provides statewide outreach to support arts education in schools across Minnesota. The Perpich Center started providing this kind of assistance immediately after the agency was created in 1985. In fact, I would say that the commitment to do statewide outreach was a critical factor in getting legislative support to create this agency. A second area of responsibility is the Arts High School in Golden Valley. This school was another key component when the legislature created this agency, although it took a few years to take the necessary steps to get students enrolled and get the school opened. A couple of unique things about the Arts High School: it has a competitive admission process, unlike other public high schools in Minnesota. Also, it has the ability to house students in a dormitory located on the Golden Valley campus. And this school has always been a two-year high school for grades 11 and 12. A third area of responsibility is more recent. In 2014, the legislature gave the Perpich Center responsibility for an existing school, Crosswinds Arts and Science School in Woodbury. Well before the Perpich Center took over this school, it was created to help foster cultural, racial, and ethnic integration among students, and it serves grades 6 through 10. Some people might ask, why do we have a state arts education agency? And again, one reason has been to provide additional options for students who can't find what they need in their local schools. The Arts High School can enroll students from around Minnesota. The reach of Crosswinds is more limited. This year, Crosswinds has students from 13 school districts. But the agency also exists to strengthen the arts programs in students' home districts. Not every school around the state can offer classes in dance or media arts or theater. And so the Perfect Center can help schools to comply with state standards in the arts or broaden their course offerings or provide opportunities for professional development by teachers. In recent years, the Perfect Center has also tried to use the arts to promote not only the artistic development of students, but also to promote academic achievement. A majority of the Perfect Center's funding has come from state general fund appropriations, and that funding has been flat for many years, as you can see in the yellow line on this chart. The red line shows the agency's appropriations in $2,000. In other words, the red line adjusts for inflation. With this adjustment, it's clear that the agency has had to support its activities with fewer general fund dollars over time. When the agency took over management of Crosswind School, it received state education aid for that school that isn't reflected in this chart. But what the chart shows is that the agency has had diminishing funds in real dollars to support its original functions, statewide outreach, and the Arts High School. The Perfect Center is governed by a 15-member board. According to statute, this board has all of the agency's formal authority. Board members are appointed by the governor to four-year terms. State law does not require appointees to the Perfect Center board to have any particular skills or expertise, but the law does say that there must be at least one member from each of Minnesota's eight congressional districts. And I think it's worth noting that nine members of the current board have been newly appointed to the board in just the last 6 months. So the current board is, in some ways, a different one from the board that oversaw the agency in recent years. Turning to our findings, and I want to start with a discussion about the governing board, because, again, that's where the statutory authority for this agency resides. We found that the board was fairly inactive in recent years, and its oversight was weak. Although there are references in board policies to the agency's strategic plan and to annual goals, the board hasn't adopted a plan or goals in about 9 years. And without agreed-upon goals, it's hard for the board to hold the agency accountable or to determine its progress. Board policy says that the board is supposed to annually review the executive director's performance, but in fact, the board has done these reviews infrequently. And in our view, this has been a missed opportunity, particularly in light of some management issues that we'll discuss shortly. Although the agency runs two schools, the board has played a relatively small role in their oversight. For example, the board has not reviewed school policies recently, and its review of school budgets has been quite superficial. The board has a policy that requires it to review Perfect Center budget proposals before they're submitted to the legislature. But in our view, if the board wants to put a stamp on the budgets, it really has to be part of the process sooner. At the time that they're submitted to the governor and to MMB for their consideration, and that hasn't happened in recent years. Finally, we note that the board itself has met less frequently in recent years, and the board's committees have rarely met. Perhaps that's okay for an advisory board, but again, I think we have to keep reminding ourselves the role of this board, which is to be a governing board. In addition, we found that the board has not solicited enough public input or been sufficiently transparent. For example, from the beginning of 2014 through September of 2016, there were 20 business meetings that the board had during that time, and on only three occasions during that period did the board offer an opportunity for public comment. Another issue is that until recently, the board did not post its meeting minutes on its website, and that certainly made it harder for parents or other stakeholders to monitor the board's actions. The board has a policy that there should be meeting minutes for all meetings of its committees, but we found that in 30% of the committee meetings, there were not minutes available. In addition, until recently, the only way for the public to contact board members was an email link on the board's, on the agency's website that took them to one of the administrative staff of the agency. Now, within the past couple of months, the board has added ways for people to directly contact board members. So overall, while the Perfect Center Board is not governed by the same statutes that govern, let's say, the school boards of independent school districts. I think it's important to remind ourselves that this is a board that does oversee two schools, and for this reason it needs to be accessible to parents and the public and to be very transparent in its actions. Aside from the board, we found problems with the performance of Purpich administrative officials. In May 2016, we sent emails to each employee of the Purpich Center, including both schools. And we told them the general areas that we were examining, and we invited them to provide observations, compliments, complaints, suggestions about these topics. What followed is that we received overwhelmingly negative comments about Purpich management and about the work environment at the agency. As Ms. Randall mentioned about 3 weeks ago, the person who served as executive director for the previous 7 years stepped down. And some might say, well, if some of the concerns were about that person's leadership, and some of those concerns were about her leadership, some might say, doesn't her departure solve the management problem? But I would say that this is still an agency that needs direction, cohesiveness, good communication, transparency, and those are things that don't magically happen overnight. Even once there is a new executive director in place, it's going to be hard work to deal with some of those issues that currently exist. Today we're also going to be issuing, as you know, a financial audit about the Purpich Center, and Ms. Ferkel will be talking about that in a few moments. But I will say that it is a report with many findings that indicate continuing challenges with financial compliance and internal controls. Another management issue is the agency's budget, which we found lacked clarity and detail. It's also important to note that many teachers and managers within the agency commented to us that they didn't know the size of their budgets. And I think that's another indication of weakness in financial management and in communication within the agency. In addition, employees have had ongoing concerns that they don't know the agency's administrative policies. And this seems like a fairly straightforward kind of thing for an agency to address, but I will say it has been an ongoing concern for many years. I want to turn next to talking about the schools the Purpich Center operates, and before we talk about the individual schools, I want to mention one issue that I think is common to both schools that relates to statutory issues. Specifically, there are no statutory provisions regarding the qualifications of the agency's school leaders. There are no requirements for Purpich to have a superintendent, even though, for example, school districts would be required by statute if they operate a high school to have a superintendent. Also, there are no requirements in statute related to the qualifications of the persons who serve as principals of the Purpich Center schools. In contrast, there are statutory requirements regarding principals in independent school districts, charter schools, even the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind have those requirements in statute. And these provisions address whether the principals have to be licensed or whether they have to have a certain knowledge or training. In recent years, the Purpich Center has not had a person acting as superintendent, and its current principals, one of them has an administrative license and the other does not. Oops, I think we went back to the beginning there. I'm going to jump ahead. Sorry about that. I want to turn next to talking about the Arts High School. And I'll just say this high school, again, has been in place for 28 years, and it has been during that time a place that has nurtured artistic talent and creativity of Arts High School students, and I'm going to show you a few examples of that. Many of the students who are at the Arts High School pursue college after high school. While at Purpich, some of these students have done very well in state arts competitions. Some of them have received really good college scholarships. So there is a lot of talent at the Arts High School. But the Arts High School's enrollment has declined in recent years. State law limits the Arts High School to 310 students, and as recently as 2011, as you can see in this chart, the school had nearly that number enrolled on the first day of school. But the chart also shows a decline since then. down to 187 students on the first day of the current school year. Is this because the school hasn't worked hard enough to attract students, or is it because the school has seen more competition from charter schools and other types of schools? I don't think we can say for sure, but we do know that we didn't see a lot of evidence that the Perpich board was discussing either this decline or the reasons for it until quite recently. In addition, the Arts High School has not been attracting as many students from outstate Minnesota as it once did. State law says that the Perpich Center Board, quote, must plan for the enrollment of pupils on an equal basis from each congressional district. Now, does that mean that the Arts High School has to have equal numbers of students enrolled from each part of the state? You know, I think the law is open to interpretation, and so that's not necessarily true. But I would point out that currently 78% of the students at the Arts High School come from the seven-county metro area. And there's one congressional district that does not have a single student enrolled at the Arts High School. We also examined the Arts High School's performance on state-required standardized tests that are administered, specifically, again, because this is only a two-year school, the one test they administer is the 11th grade math test, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Exam. And in 2016, only 18% of tested students at the Arts High School were deemed proficient on the math test, compared with a statewide average of 47%. I would also mention that we learned that in 2014, the Perpich Center did not even administer this required test to the Arts High School students. In addition, we found that attendance policies at the Arts High School were not enforced in recent years, at least in the two previous academic years. Parents and students are supposed to receive notification when multiple unexcused absences occur. And we heard some frustration from teachers and others who felt that the lack of enforcement has affected the culture and the rigor at the school. One other fact that I think is worth noting about the Arts High School, the average cost per student at the school is more than $20,000 per student per year. Among other public schools in the state, the average is about $11,500. Now, some people have suggested perhaps turning the Arts High School into a charter school. There have been some proposals in the past for that. But I think when you see that the cost per student is in excess of $20,000 per year, it certainly makes it harder to be talking about converting the school to a charter school, because those types of revenues don't generally flow to a charter school. Now I want to shift to a discussion of Crosswind School. And before we talk about the issues raised in our report, I think it's important to consider the school's history. It opened in 1998. There were some school districts at that time that later became known as the East Metro Integration District, or EMID, that jointly established Crosswinds. And as noted earlier, it was intended to be a magnet for students of different cultural, racial, and ethnic backgrounds. In 2001, the school moved to St. Paul. It had received more than $20 million in bonds to establish a permanent school building. So it had been in St. Paul temporarily, and then it moved to its current location in Woodbury in 2001. And for a period of years, EMID operated two schools, Crosswinds being one, that promoted voluntary integration. But over time, the member districts of EMID decided that they preferred using their state integration dollars for purposes other than running schools. And so EMID started looking at options for Crosswinds. And in 2013, it voted to support a transfer of Crosswinds to Perpich. The legislature that year did not pass a bill making that transfer official, but it did do that in 2014. So how has Crosswinds fared under the Perpich Center? Unfortunately, enrollment has not rebounded to the levels that existed when EMID ran the school. There was uncertainty at the school back in 2012, 2013, when there were discussions about the school's future. And so there were a lot of parents that decided to move their kids to other schools. In the last year that EMID ran the school, which is shown here in green, there were 349 students at Crosswinds. The next year, when Perpich ran it under contract with EMID, there were 172 students. And Perpich officials had testified at the time of the transfer that they would be able to grow the student, school by about 50 students per year, but that hasn't happened. Enrollment remains stable through 2015, but in fall 2016, the enrollment was 129 students. And again, that isn't a good direction for a school that was already struggling to survive. In addition, when we look at student test scores, there have been issues with the proficiency of students at Crosswinds, and the trends have not been in the right direction. In green on this chart, you can see the percentage of students deemed proficient at Crosswinds in different subject areas in spring 2013, and again, that was the last year that EMID was running the school. In red, you see the most recent test scores, which would have been from the spring of 2016, and in science, reading, and math, the test scores have gone down. Compared with other schools and compared with the goals that Perpich itself has set, the levels of performance have not been strong. There's also been significant staff turnover at Crosswinds since Perpich began managing it. There have been four principals in 4 years. Many staff and teachers have left and been replaced. In a number of cases, teachers have said they felt under-supported. I mentioned earlier the cost per student at the Arts High School. Crosswinds also has a high cost per student. In the previous school year, the approximate cost per student was $18,000 per student. And the costs have been high enough that the school state aid haven't been able to cover these costs. And so a substantial amount of money from the Perpich Center has gone to help pay for basic costs at Crosswinds. And some of those have even come out of the outreach budget of the Perpich Center, which we'll be discussing in a moment. Crosswinds officials have put in place a number of new efforts this year to provide better staff training and improve the educational options for students. Maybe these efforts will pay dividends and we'll see improvement in test scores, improvements in enrollment. It's too early to know. But we do think that the first 3 years at Crosswinds under Perpich leadership were a disappointment, and they have raised questions about the school's viability. A final area that we looked at is statewide outreach that the Perpich Center provides to support arts education throughout Minnesota. And I want to just briefly highlight four key programs that the Perpich Center does in this area. Turnaround Arts is a national program, and the Perpich Center currently administers this program in 8 schools in the state that had low academic performance previously. And Perpich tries to infuse the arts into these schools to foster school-wide improvements. Arts Integration is a program for selected schools in certain parts of the state. Teams of teachers develop individual lessons that combine the arts with other subjects. Perpich has provided funding to support what are called regional centers in some parts of the state. And in these cases, a host school district will coordinate training and professional development in other schools in that region. In addition, Perpich has employed educational specialists to provide tailored expertise to individual schools and school districts. Perpich used to have specialists in each of the arts areas. Now they have one person who is full-time in this function. We think there have been some positive effects of the Perpich Center's outreach efforts. A number of years ago, Perpich staff worked with state officials to draft statewide art standards, and Perpich staff have helped individual school districts implement those standards. There are also a number of specific outreach activities mandated in state law that the Perpich Center has not been implementing. For example, the agency is supposed to offer summer arts institutes for students in grades 9 through 12. It hasn't been doing that for quite a number of years. Maybe the fact that Perpich isn't implementing all of these outreach efforts that are mandated in law partly reflects some of the erosion of the agency's general fund appropriations that we talked about earlier. In addition, the Perpich Center's efforts don't reach a very large percentage of the state's teachers in a given year, and many arts teachers conveyed to us that they would like more help. For example, the Perpich Center has not had a music specialist on staff in outreach for many years, or for a number of years, even though this is the arts area that around the state accounts for the largest numbers of arts teachers statewide. The Purpose Center, I think, deserves credit for initiating outside evaluations of many of its outreach activities, and those evaluations have mostly shown positive impacts as reflected in surveys and observations. Generally, the evaluations have not measured the impact of the programs on student test scores, and national studies suggest that arts education is worth supporting, but those studies have shown mixed impacts on student achievement. I want to turn finally to our recommendations, and we have a complete list of the recommendations in this report on pages 91 and 92, but I'm going to hit some high points here. We think the Purpose Center Board should provide clearer direction to the agency and stronger oversight, setting goals and holding the agency accountable. The Board should take steps to ensure greater public input and participation, posting meeting minutes and other board materials online, offering opportunities for public comments at meetings. Board policy requires annual evaluations of the executive director, and board policy says the executive director is to be accountable for all of the agency's performance. We think the board should abide by this policy and do these evaluations regularly. The board should receive periodic reports on school activities, on enrollment, on measures of success, and in general, it should review the operations of the schools more actively. The agency should comply with what the statutes require, and if the statutes need to be updated, the agency has a responsibility to bring its proposals to the legislature. And as far as recommendations that we have in this report for the legislature, we do think that the legislature should consider changes in the Purpose Board's role, size, and composition, and we kind of walk through the pros and cons of these things. You know, maybe the board should have fewer than 15 members. That's a larger board than most state-authorized boards. Maybe the legislature should specify in statute certain skills or experience that it would like to see on the Purpose Center Board. But I think we caution this report that those kinds of statutory provisions are not a panacea. The most important changes in Purpose Center management are the ones that need to be made from within the agency, in our view. We also think the legislature should establish minimum requirements for Purpose administrators of its schools, as it's done for other schools. For example, principals of Purpose schools should either be required to have administrative licenses or to undergo certain training subject to the governing board's review. We also think the legislature should update the Purpose Center statutes. Again, we think Purpose leaders should play a role in offering suggestions for this. But we think the legislature should consider which outreach activities, for example, are most critical for this agency to be putting at the top of its priority list. Our report suggests that the legislature should consider whether the Purpose Center's scope should be amended. And when we use the word scope, again, this agency is responsible for two schools and for statewide outreach. So we pose four options in this report, ranging from keeping the agency's scope pretty much unchanged to eliminating the agency altogether. And what we say is of the agency's current functions, we think Crosswind School is the one that seems the most tenuous at the moment. Now, perhaps the Purpose Center will be a stronger agency if its activities are narrowed, or perhaps the legislature thinks that the recent changes in the Purpose Center Board will be sufficient to get the agency kind of back on track without changing the agency's scope at all. We don't offer any recommendations. Again, we kind of walk through some pros and cons, and there are risks and consequences of each of these options. But we do think this is the right time to start a hard look at what the agency can do best and at what is financially sustainable. So overall, our evaluation concluded that the Purpose Center has, for more than 30 years, played an important role in arts education. But in recent years, we think that the board has not provided sufficient leadership. And the legislature should consider what it wants this agency to accomplish and then make whatever adjustments in statutes and resources will enable the agency to achieve this. And we will turn next to some words about the financial audit.
Welcome, Ms. Ferkel. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cecile Ferkel. I am the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division. The Financial Audit is the smaller of the two reports. It's got a little lighter blue on it than the other one. This audit was an internal controls and compliance audit where we examined how well the organization had established controls in its financial processes to ensure that it was conducting its operations in a good way in terms of financial management, and then also in compliance with the various statutes, state policies, and purpose center policies that we examined. We looked at the period from July 2013 through March 2016. So we looked at fiscal years 14, 15, and much of fiscal year 16. If I can turn your attention to page 8, where we have the conclusion from our audit work. Our conclusion was that the Purpose Center for Arts did not have adequate internal controls over its financial management and that it did not always comply with legal requirements we tested. Our conclusions, this is the lowest level of our conclusions. Our conclusions typically would be either that controls are adequate and compliance occurred, that they're generally adequate, which means that there are some exceptions. But when we get to a conclusion that internal controls are not adequate or that the agency did not adequately comply, we're finding a breadth of weaknesses in internal control processes and errors. And the report contains 12 findings and recommendations where just about every area we looked at, we found a variety of errors, we found a variety of noncompliance, perhaps with union contracts and benefits that were provided or payments that were made to the teachers, noncompliance with the state's fixed asset inventory records in the way that they oversaw the equipment and the other assets that they hold and make sure that they're well accounted for. So really throughout the scope of what we looked at, there were many errors in transactions and weaknesses in controls. I do want to discuss a couple of the findings, and the first one is finding one, which is on the facing page, page 9. One of the requirements as the legislature set in place statutes overseeing how Perpich would administer Crosswind School was that Crosswinds would maintain its state funding through the Department of Education. And part of the statutory requirement was that for Crosswind School's operation, Perpich would continue to report financial activity through the Department of Education, through the system that it had established for all other schools and school districts. And this is something that Crosswinds had previously been doing as a part of EMID. We found that Perpich had not adequately prepared for that responsibility. In fact, that after it missed initial deadlines for providing information, the Department of Education contacted Perpich Center and said, you have to meet these requirements and get this financial information in. The Department of Education had to follow up a few months later with another request for the information because they had not received an adequate response from Perpich. And at that point, Perpich started contacting an auditor and developing ways to translate the financial information to the format that the Department of Education wanted. But ultimately, when the Department of Education, by December of 2016, had not yet received the information, they notified the Perpich Center. It was in October of 2016. They notified the Perpich Center that they would be reducing the special ed aids for Crosswind School for fiscal year 15 from nearly $500,000 to zero. So education at that point was saying, we're not providing you with any of this special ed funding until you get this financial information to us. It's our understanding that by the end of fiscal year 16, Perpich Center auditors had completed their reviews and audits of Perpich Center financial information, had provided that information to the Department of Education, and the Department of Education, we believe, is currently assessing restoring whether or not and to what extent they will restore those special ed aids. So that, we felt, was really a pretty significant lack of attention to an important statutory requirement that was really very closely connected to the amount of financial aid available to Crosswind School. Now I'd like to turn to finding two, which starts on page 10. And really what I want to talk about is the first bullet in this finding on page 11. One of Purpose Center's biggest expenditures is payroll to its teachers, to its administrators, to its maintenance staff, everybody that works there. It's over $8 million a year out of an $11 million budget. It's a big expense. Their payroll is processed through the state's payroll system. A part of that system is that there's an automated timesheet that employees complete. The employee then, through an automated method, passes that timesheet off to their supervisor, who then approves that timesheet. And typically that rolls up into the state's payroll system and is the basis for payroll payment. Something that we saw at Purpich that we do not typically see at any other state agency, and really I've polled my auditors, you ever see anything like this before? And we all agreed, not to this extent. 25% of the payroll transactions that we tested did not correspond to that timesheet that was prepared by the employee and approved by the supervisor. Now, there is a way for payroll clerks to go in and make changes, and often those changes are necessary. Maybe an employee forgets to record a holiday or is out sick and isn't preparing their timesheet. And the state has policies and procedures to how to circle back on that. And the payroll clerk has access into the system to make changes. But policies require that when you're making changes to that fundamental control to ensure the integrity of payroll, which is the timesheet prepared by the employee and approved by the supervisor, if you're processing payroll that's different from what is documented there, you have to document the reason for that. You have to provide explanation to ensure that that's approved and authorized. And that's what we did not see. Now, of course, because we lacked that connection to the timesheets, we did analyze these payroll payments, and we really didn't see that there was inappropriate payments or things that were really out of line. Like something we would look for, like is somebody getting an excessive amount of overtime that maybe is not supported somewhere. But instead, we did tend to see the typical kinds of things that often we were able to say, oh, I see what they were doing. But the point is that Purpich Center has a responsibility to be accountable for those transactions and to make sure that when they're making those kinds of changes that differ from the timesheets, they need to document those and make sure that they are approved, accurate, and authorized. Throughout the rest of the report, you're going to see findings that deal with errors, mistakes, lack of documentation. Lack of documentation kind of across the board was an issue when we would look at transactions. Lack of documentation of how a transaction was calculated and lack of documentation for authorizations. So you're going to see those kinds of issues. And really it was the breadth of the kinds of findings that we found, the degree of errors that we found, that really led us to the conclusion that internal controls were not adequate and they had not adequately complied. Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair and members, I think that concludes our overview of the two reports, and I know that we have given you a lot to digest. I mean, as I said at the beginning, these are broad and serious concerns at most of the levels of the agency. And so I know that you are probably still trying to absorb everything you've just heard, but of course we'd be happy to answer questions. And I do know there are folks here from the Purpich Center also who are available to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. And remember, she is the deputy, not the assistant auditors, so I want to make that correction because that was inaccurate of me to say. So Ms. Randall is the deputy auditor under Mr. Nobles. I have a question for you, Ms. Ferkel. You have done previous financial audits of Purpich and would have to because it's a state agency. Would you comment on those, please?
Madam Chair, we have done audits of Purpich typically about every 4 years. We have often found, and to varying degrees, concerns about their internal controls. Some of the issues in this report are repeated findings from previous reports that we've had. Something like the fixed asset inventory is an area that we have cited in the last couple of reports as being something that the Purpich Center has not done, has not made sure that property purchased with state dollars is properly labeled, that it's periodically found, identified, and also that they would be reporting instances to us and documenting instances where equipment or equipment is lost or stolen. So an issue like that goes back several audits. Receipts is another area that we have previously reported also.
Thank you. And Mr. Alter, as far as program evaluations, has the Perpich Center for the Arts been evaluated program-wise previously?
Madam Chair, we have not done a previous evaluation of the Perpich Center, and as you're well aware, having served on the Audit Commission, evaluations, unlike financial audits, are done at the request of the Audit Commission. We can do financial audits and do them cyclically of agencies as often as resources allow. In the case of evaluations, the Legislative Audit Commission, one of its primary purposes is to make decisions every year about what agencies or programs or functions we should look at. And I know that there have been a number of years previously where there have been some suggestions for us to look at the Perpich Center, but it was only in the spring of 2016 when the Audit Commission approved this topic, and we had not done previous evaluations.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. Let's go to questions from members. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions just to go back to some of the data that you reviewed. To begin with, when you talked about the 20,000 per student, is any of it accounted for the fact that this is room and board in addition? Okay.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Pryor, good question. There are some dorm expenditures in there, and let me just see if I can tease those out for you. If we were looking at the expenditures per pupil and taking out the dorm expenses, it would be just under 20,000. So if we're including everything, if we're including operating costs, dorm, and food service expenditures, we're over 21,000 for the mm-hmm. arts high school. If we take out let's take out the dorm and the food service, and then we're at about 18,770. Taking out just the dorm, it's at 19,600 roughly. Mm-hmm. So that gives you, I mean, the dorm expenses are in there. Mm-hmm. They bring it down some. They're still pretty high mm-hmm. compared with other schools.
And then if I can follow up on this
please.
A little bit more. If these teachers also have this outreach responsibility, is that separated out from attributing it to a student cost?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Pryor, there is an expectation in the position descriptions of the arts high school teachers that they provide some outreach. I will say that one of the things that we noted in the report is that there has not been tracking to determine the extent to which that outreach actually occurs. I know from talking with arts high school teachers, there's a lot of variability in terms of, there's certainly some arts high school teachers that do outreach and work with some school districts, and there are others who probably don't do any. So there's no real good sense of the extent to which that occurs. I believe that the expenditures that I'm basing these costs per student on include, it's basically the budget for the arts high school, including whatever they're devoting to outreach.
Okay. Thank you.
And questions from other members? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And whether it's Deborah Yee or Mr. Alter, either one of you can address this. I come from a business background and also a nonprofit background, and I've done training for boards. So I understand the role of governance and the importance of fiduciary accountability. So it's very concerning to me to see the turnover in this board, and I'd like your opinion and recommendation on how new appointees can address these significant problems when they don't have the institutional knowledge or the background as to what has happened at Perpich.
Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair and Representative Haley, I think there are a couple of really important things that I want to address based on what you said. The first is, I agree completely that when you join a board, a critical thing that has to happen is some sort of orientation and training, understanding the organization that you're looking at. And we comment in the report that has been a weakness of Purpose Center. People have come onto the board, and it's been kind of hit and miss. There's a packet of information that's given to board members that generally includes statutes. It includes the board bylaws. Sometimes it hasn't included what are called the board policies, which supplement the bylaws. I don't think it has generally included the board budget. So there have been weaknesses in training and orientation that we think need to be addressed going forward. Regarding the turnover of the board members, and I agree that it is a challenge anytime there is turnover in a board to kind of move forward. I would say that my sense is that some of the turnover that has occurred in this board, and again, a reminder that the appointments to the board are made by the governor, but my sense is that the governor's office has had some concerns about the board and some of the issues that we raise in this report. I don't think we're probably news to the governor's office. I think they had some concerns, and they have replaced some members of the board. So, you know, on the one hand, there is a challenge by having 9 new members on the board today going forward. This board has to get up to speed quickly. They have to be more active, and they have to provide direction. But I would also say it's an opportunity. We have had, for a number of years, a board that has been fairly inactive, as we said. I think the hope would be that perhaps a new board will address some of those issues that we raise in this report and provide more direction.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to follow up then with another question, if I may. Do you have indication then that the new board has a timeline and a strategic plan that will address these concerns and show accountability, particularly fiduciary accountability? This is a significant amount of money that doesn't appear to be being used to help students in the best fashion.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I do know that the acting board chair asked us to come next week to appear before their Budget and Finance Committee. We do have a representative of the board here today that you may want to put that question to. I think, again, there has been such leadership change in just the last few weeks. We literally today have a board chair who wasn't in place 3 weeks ago. We have an executive director position, which is not filled at the moment, but will be in coming months. So there's a lot of change, and I don't think there is a firm timetable for exactly when things have to be in place, but it may be good to hear from the board on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Mr. Alter, how many executive directors have there been at Purpich since its inception?
Madam Chair, and there's actually a little box on page, it's near the front of the report, on page 5 of the report. There have been 5 people who have been executive directors, and that includes one person who served for more than 3 years as an interim director, but there's the history of directors during Purpich's.
And Mr. Alter, were you able to interview these, not only Ms. Mackert, but previous directors?
Madam Chair, members, we did actually contact all of the previous directors and had either an email exchange or a conversation with all of them. And I think our intent was just to understand what they saw as the importance of the agency or the challenges the agency faced. Obviously, we talked much more with Sue Mackert, who is the most recent executive director, but we did reach out to all of the previous directors and contact them.
Maybe this is not an appropriate question, but I'm going to take a stab at it. Leadership is so important. We know that from other boards we have. Governance is set in place by the board, but it's implemented in part by the executive director. So did anything bubble to the top in regard to the kinds of leadership that went on during this time? And the consistency of the board as you did your interviews?
Madam Chair, and correct me if I'm not addressing your question. I mean, clearly there have been changes in the board membership over time. I'm just trying to think of It was in 2010, of course, that the board last picked an executive director. I would say there was a period of stability on the board during the years that followed. I mean, one of the things we observed, which is quite striking, I think, is that there was a point in 2010, shortly after the executive director was appointed at that time, until well into 2016, when there was never a dissenting vote on the Perpich board on any issue. I mean, we went through the minutes, and obviously issues were discussed and there were votes taken. We never saw evidence of a dissenting vote for about 6 years. Before then, there was evidence, and you know, I hesitate to go too much further because we didn't go back throughout Perpich's history, but I think that was something striking to us, that the board, you know, there are usually internal differences within a board, and you would generally see more differences of opinion showing up, and we hadn't seen that in recent years.
And Mr. Alter, how about in regard to the addition of crosswinds? Did the board seem to have the understanding of their obligation in now taking over crosswinds as this arts and science school, which, you know, as the legislature debated this in 2013 and 14, and Representative Mariani's not here, but he was the chair, and he conducted hearings out in the school district area. The school was much appreciated by parents, loved by the students. They testified at the hearings that were held, and then the conveyance occurred. And I just wonder if you could, in your interviews, understand whether or not they realized, the board and the executive director to that extent too, the obligation they were taking on and the direction they needed to continue to make this a viable choice for parents and our children.
Madam Chair, I think that the board had a lot of discussions at the time that Perpich's name came up regarding crosswinds. And just as a bit of background, Enid initially looked at its member districts and considered whether any of them would be able to take over crosswinds. When they didn't see any obvious choices there, they went to Perpich and they said, would you be interested? And Perpich responded and eventually said, yeah, and Perpich came forward with a proposal. The board never formally took an action to support the legislative conveyance of crosswinds to Perpich. They did approve a management contract that Perpich operated under in that first year. We thought it was unusual that the board never actually took a formal action to say, yes, we support taking over crosswinds. It seemed like something that a board would be in a position to kind of provide leadership on. I think they had a lot of discussions about taking over crosswinds. I don't think there were objections among the board members of taking over crosswinds. But I would also say that we asked on numerous occasions whether there was a clear plan for crosswinds if Perpich were to take it over. And Perpich presented a proposal to EMED, but that was pretty high level and pretty limited on details. We never saw anything more detailed than that, and I do think that is something that, looking back, would have been good to have in hand for the board and also for the administrators of the agency to have a clearer picture about, you know, there has to be an audit done of this school. And as we saw, there wasn't one done in a timely manner, or, you know, certain things that had to be kind of front and center going forward to get the school back on track. And I'm sure there were discussions about that, but we didn't see a formal plan.
Thank you, Mr. Alter. And, of course, it is very disappointing to me that, you know, Perpich took on this obligation without realizing they were now also over a public school. And what occurs within the funding source and programming of a public school was certainly more complex, I think, than what they were used to. And I'm sure, disappointing to everyone at this table that we may see the demise of crosswinds, and how very, very sad when we had heard from parents and students what a wonderful opportunity this was. And in many respects, you know, I'm disappointed with EMED that they suddenly found no reason to support these two schools that they created as specialties in integration and bringing together, you know, these many school children from these many school districts to get this wonderful education in arts and science. Members, I do want to point out to you that when the OILA makes recommendations, they use the verb should. So you're probably thinking must in your mind, as I am, but this is the way they recommend to us in recommendations, should, not must. So they don't make directives to us. We're the policymakers, and so keep that in mind as we go forward. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, could you let me know what is the admission process for the Piper Center?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Lee, I'm going to not know the timeline exactly, but it's a process where students have to obviously submit and notify the school of their interest, and then there is actually an audition process and an interview process that students go through. And so my recollection is that they submit some samples of their work. They'll interview with some teachers. There's both a review of their academic work as well as their artistic work. And there are a number of teachers and administrators from the Arts High School that are a part of that process. And I should say that over time, the percentage of students who are admitted to the Arts High School has increased a bit. I think the last we saw, about 70% of those students applying for admission were admitted. If you go back 15 years ago, it was about 55%. But it's a process, I think, that usually takes place in the spring of the year with notifications going out to students before they're done with their, it would typically be a 10th grade year, to know whether they are admitted for 11th grade. And I should also mention that Purpich does have some authority, or they take it upon themselves to determine, as students go through 11th grade, whether those students should be invited back for 12th grade, and some of them are not.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with the declining enrollment, are we seeing a declining in interest or application to the Piper's too?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, we have seen a decline in admissions, and again, it's hard, a decline in applications. It's hard to know, again, whether is that because the word hasn't gotten out there to enough people? Is it because those students who might 10 years ago have applied to the Arts High School, now they've got some other options, or their home school has a lot of our arts options of its own? We don't know, but there has been some decline in admissions. We've got some details in the report. I'm going to see if I can point you to a page and quickly, but it's around 47. I'm not sure if it's right on that page, but we've got some discussion of the changes in applications over time. 47, 48, I think.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Representative Lee, follow up.
Last one, Madam Chair. So is direct recruitment a still part of the outreach effort that the Piper Center have to do too, or not?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, again, I think we don't know for sure exactly what's missing that might not be bringing students to the door. We do comment in the view of some people. There was a period of time when Purpich did not have a permanent employee who was the admissions director, and that was over a period of several years. And an argument could be made that perhaps Purpich wasn't getting out and doing enough to solicit and recruit potential students. But again, you know, if you go way back to the beginning of the Purpich Center, there were no charter schools in 1985. There are a lot of things that are different on the landscape, and while some of the charter schools that do have an arts focus today are very focused in one thing, maybe in performing arts, so maybe that doesn't affect so much a student looking at visual arts, there are definitely more options out there for students, and that may certainly be a factor.
Representative Lee, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Ward, she was our champion on this, by the way.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. And I want to, first of all, thank the auditor, all of you, all of the auditors that work in the OLA's office. You have done amazing work. You've spent countless hours researching, getting in depth, really, really teasing out the challenges that face both of these schools and the center itself. And I want to say thank you. I'll give you a little background because we have several freshmen on this committee. I became involved in this actually before my election with Crosswinds. Crosswinds is in my district. And Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson, said very well how these families have been impacted by Crosswinds education opportunities. So I was having people seek me out, as I said, before my election, and then certainly afterwards saying, please help us. And at the time, I would say, maybe I didn't do my due diligence as a freshman in looking at Perpich. It was already, the conversations had already started when I heard about this, and I thought, well, this makes sense. It seems like a good fit. An arts high school, and they're willing to take over Crosswinds. And then you've heard the story of what's happened. And that has all led to our seeking endorsement from the legislature to have the legislative auditor do an audit of the PCEA. And I'm very, very grateful for the support of the legislature in bringing this forward, because that's how we're going to solve the problems. People have said to me, why did it take so long? These problems have been apparent for years, growing problems. Why did it take so long? And I want to say, you know, as part of it is our responsibility. Maybe we haven't asked the hard questions. Maybe this is a lesson for us. I really appreciate the questions that you, particularly freshmen, have been asking. These are the hard questions that we need to be asking agencies when they come and ask for money. We want to hold agencies accountable. That's our job. So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity to have a turnaround in a school. I do think we need to give some, we've got options, but it's up to the board. They have the statutory authority to make the decisions. I will say, first of all, that Mr. Alter referenced hard work that will need to be done by these agencies and the schools to change the systemic issues that we've been hearing about. But I believe they can do it, and I know that the board stands ready to do this, and I'd like to address that. I handed out, or asked the page to hand out to you, a letter from the interim board chair. They will have an annual meeting in February, and they will elect new officers at that time. And I wanted to spend a little time sharing with you to maybe alleviate some concerns about the selection of the new board members. I have been working with the governor's office, who appoints board members, and MMB has been deeply involved, as well as the auditor's office, in this process. So also for the freshmen, last year we brought forward from this committee a bill essentially trying to hold Perpich accountable to the statutory requirements. And we ran into some resistance because people felt like we needed to wait until the auditor's report came out. What we actually did get passed in law last year was that we were requiring the board to have training. The board packet that people received, because I have talked to some of these board members, varied. The contents varied. But there was really no instruction, no conversation. And as we had testimony last year about this, I was justifying this, what had happened, by saying the board didn't know what they didn't know. They were not people who had experience in the kinds of management leadership that was required. They just didn't know. And they were told that everything was okay. So what we tried to do in that bill and what, with the help of the governor's office, we've been able to do. I also say that one of the reasons there were 9 positions open is that it's up to the Senate to confirm board assignments, board recommendations. The governor can recommend someone, but that person does not sit on the board until they can sit on the board and they can function as a board, but they are not confirmed until the Senate confirms them. So what we were trying to do in the bill last year was to identify some of the skills and abilities that board members need in order to be effective on such a responsibility. So this is all outlined in your letter, and maybe I don't need to read it to you, but it identifies the new board members and the skills that they bring and the talents and the commitment that are needed to address the shortcomings of this agency and the schools. They will have the background. Additionally, we ask that they be trained. That was resisted until we had some change in leadership on the board, and they did actually, 8 of them went through the Minnesota School Boards Association's training earlier this month, so that they have some better understanding as a group. Some of them came with this background anyway because they've served on school boards. They understand how school board budgets work. They understand some of those kinds of things in terms of student accountability, communications with various agencies. Now we have a core group of people on the board who have been trained as a group to move forward, and we have very strong leadership. Unfortunately, the board chair couldn't be here today. He's out of the state. But there are members of the community, families, parents, staff, and board members that are in the audience and are prepared to answer any questions that you might have. But first, I want to thank the auditor again, and thank you for your indulgence and consideration of this really, really serious thing.
Thank you, Representative Ward. And members, every time Perpich requests a budget item through the Finance Committee, the appropriation, we have had major discussions about Perpich, not only publicly but also within our caucuses. Going back to Chair Segrin, I remember many appearances from Perpich executive directors, and I think when you see what happened with the funding, that was an indication from us that we had concerns. And I have made, I think, not recently, but in previous years, 2 or 3 visits to the School of Arts and asked questions, had grand tours, talked to students and teachers. But we have had these underlying concerns. And so now we have gotten really, I think, to the meat of this problem. And like Representative Ward said, we're going to make some changes. But we're also counting on the board members to be instrumental in hiring a new executive director who's going to reach the mission that's stated in the bylaws of Perpich, and to ensure that the students who seek to attend this wonderful high school are going to get that opportunity and get the best of support and direction. Mr. Alter, I have a question from Mr. Heller, who's unofficially always speaking about Twice Exceptional, and he's wondering if your report is fully accessible with Adobe Reader software. Is it or is it not, Mr. Alter?
Madam Chair, as far as I know, but I'm going to let Judy.
Ms. Randall. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Heller for the question. We do a lot of work to make our reports accessible online, and so I believe it is fully accessible as required by law, but we have also made several offers to Mr. Heller to talk with him directly about specific concerns he may have related to accessibility of our reports.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Mm-hmm. Find that. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I myself am a teacher, and probably for the last 10, 12 years, I have been a testing coordinator in my school, and we take that very seriously. And so I was a little horrified to hear that in 2015, no MCA tests had been implemented. And I guess my question is, how is that even possible that something like that happened? And then my second question to that is, have there been any form of overall assessment, such as MAP testing or any of the other tests that are available? And when the state realized that that hadn't happened, because you do have to register your students, what sort of follow-up or ramifications came from that?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Kunesh-Budin, the year was 2014 when there were no tests administered for the Arts High School, and we noticed that as we looked at the history of test scores. And so the natural question was, well, what happened? Is it just missing from the data? We first went to the Department of Education and said, is there an error? Is there something that didn't get posted on the MDE website? And they said, that isn't the case. If it's not out there, they weren't done. So we then went to Purpich and had a conversation with the executive director about it, and she said that there was a decision made that it would be more in the students' interest to have them prepare for and take the ACTs rather than to do the MCAs. That was the decision that year, and so they did not. She said that they consulted with the Department of Education about that. We went back to the Department of Education testing director and said, you know, is this something that the department okayed? And she said, no, it's a compulsory test, and so we would not have given them the go-ahead on that. So whatever conversation there may have been between the department and Purpich doesn't excuse the fact that it is a required test and it was not administered that year. It was administered in 2015 and 2016. I should mention that the number of test takers dropped quite a lot in 2016. And I know that there are some other schools and school districts that have seen that phenomenon. I don't have an explanation for it, but they at least administered the test.
Representative Kunesh-Budin.
Thank you. So do you know if there were any other tests taken, such as MAP testing, to be able to validify the progress of the students?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Kunesh-Budin, not that I'm aware of. And that may be a question that someone at Purpich can answer, but not that I have ever seen or heard about.
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to let the committee and Representative Kunesh-Budin know that later this session we'll be releasing another evaluation on standardized testing. So we may have more information on these questions then, too.
Thank you. Mr. Alter, do you know if Purpich had a World's Best Workforce strategic plan in place or were required to do so? Because I believe they would be, and maybe the department will address this later.
Madam Chair, you may want to put that question to Purpich. I want to say that I've heard reference to that, but I'm not sure.
Thank you. Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, or Ms. Randall, I'm looking at your options that the legislature should consider. You've done many of these audits. I, being new, have only seen two. I'm curious, do you often include an option when you do these audits for the elimination of a particular agency?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Jessup, I would say it's not often on the list, but I think that in this case where we looked at the functions, we looked at the two schools and we looked at outreach, it seemed like a natural question to ask, even if we didn't arrive at the conclusion, which we didn't, that the option of elimination was a preferred option. We don't have a recommendation on which option. But it seemed like there were questions about each of the three functions, and given that, it seemed worth putting that on the table. Anytime you talk about eliminating a state agency and the impact on employees that are there, and in this case, the impact on students, that's a huge consideration. And I think that that certainly is would be front and center if that option were even considered. And again, our suggestion is that of the various options we put on the table, the one that is most compelling is to take a hard look at crosswinds, but we do think there are questions to be asked about the functions Purpich provides, whether they're being provided adequately, and whether they could be provided in a different way. So we put them out there for legislators who will make the ultimate choice to consider.
Representative Jessup, follow-up?
Yes, more kind of commentary I will have to say at this point. And just for background, I am a business owner. And, you know, we look at, in all of our lives, various businesses. And businesses get started, businesses succeed, and at some point, businesses sometimes go away. I mean, we're finding that with the latest introduction of Macy's saying they're going to close their Minneapolis store. And Macy's has been there for many, many years. It's an icon. It's one of the, we'll say, landmarks of Minneapolis. And for all of us to see it go, it's sad. But yet, the economic realities are that it's time. And I guess I would contend and say perhaps that may be the situation with your fourth recommendation, eliminating the Purpich Center. In 1985, it fulfilled an outstanding purpose. It had an objective, and it was successful in accomplishing that objective and providing the arts education to a talented number of students within our state. Mr. Alter, you had us go to page 47, I believe, and I reference then page 48, where you have some other alternatives now, especially in the Twin Cities area, of other arts education options, which most likely at the time of 1985 did not exist.
Right.
Today, we have many more options available for students. And I look at the audit that you have composed, and I greatly appreciate all of your efforts. I commend you on this. This is probably not a very easy task. It's difficult, particularly when the results are not what everyone would like to see. But I've got a number of things that I just wrote down. I mean, we've had waning applications and enrollment. We've got a declining academic performance, meaning we're not delivering to the students what we would desire overall as a state. We've had poor board oversight. We've had weak, limited administrative leadership. We've had significant financial management issues, minimal public visibility, and we've got excess costs per student. Now, if the Purpich Center were a business, that would be so many red flags that it's time to close that the decision would have probably occurred for that business probably 3 or 4 years previous. So I just have to say from a business perspective, I'm inclined to say that my thought process from this is that perhaps the appropriate next step would be to gracefully wind down these two schools and allow these children to participate in arts education in other venues and other options, other art education facilities there in the area. And we want their performances to be high, and that is not what is occurring here. So my apology, I'm a little long-winded, but I appreciate the opportunity for commentary.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Alter.
Let me just offer a comment. I don't want to let the moment pass without us saying we had many conversations with Purpich officials ranging from board members, top of the agency, teachers, you name it. We've talked with people throughout the organization. There's a high level of commitment among these employees to what they do. There are some immensely talented teachers at both schools. I mean, we've talked to them. We've heard comments from people about them. There are outreach people who are doing their very best to provide support to teachers around the state. And so I don't want to get lost in the message here, the fact that there is outstanding work that Purpich has done. And we think the management and the governance of this organization needs a shake-up. and needs a path forward, it's your choice where to go next, I would say. But I do believe that there is good work that is done within this organization.
Representative Naquait and members, we want to hear from those who are here from Purpich and Crosswind. So if you could make your questions very specific, I would appreciate it. Representative Naquait.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question about Crosswind. So it was created as an integration magnet, and I guess I'm looking here and I'm seeing that it really doesn't define what that is. But I guess for the purpose of understanding whatever Crosswinds defines that as, have they fulfilled that purpose, did you find in your audit? If so, how? And if not, how not?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Representative Quaid, I'm not sure I can give you a definitive answer as to whether they have fulfilled that, but they have. In Chapter 1, there's kind of a profile of the students at Crosswinds, and it is a racially and ethnic diverse school. Mm-hmm. They draw a lot of their students from the St. Paul School District. They have a pretty high special ed population at the school. So they have a challenging student population. They have a diverse student population. They have put in place some training. I would say not so much in the first 3 years at the school. I know that this year they have been trying to provide teachers with additional training to make them better able to deal with culturally diverse populations of students. So I can't tell you whether they're succeeding in that or provide you with any benchmark, but I know that's part of what the school is trying to accomplish.
Representative Naquait, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've discussed a lot the lack of teachers of color in Minnesota. How does Crosswinds fare with reference to our 96% white teachers?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Quaid, I'm thinking of people we've seen and talked with, and it's a fairly white teacher population, but I would prefer for Purpich to give us a more definitive picture of that.
Thank you.
So members, we're going to move to hear from Purpich and Crosswinds. Thank you very much, auditors. I'm sure we'll be in contact with you shortly. Will those who have come from Crosswinds and Purpich come forward, please? The principal of Crosswinds, the principal of Purpich, and the administrative director. Go ahead, Representative Ward. We'll make a comment while you come forward.
Thank you.
If there's a board member, too, who would like to come forward, please. Please do. And maybe you want to speak first.
While they're taking their seats, I just want to clarify something. Crosswinds Arts and Science School was built with bonding money to be an arts and integration school. In order for the state to close that, it has to either be conveyed, as we did to Purpich, for that same program purpose, or sold. So we're not talking about a really easy transition time. There's some big steps with that. I'm not sure about Purpich's property, but I'm assuming that the purchase for the campus would have been similar.
Welcome to our committee, and please say your name for the record, and let's begin with the board member.
My name is Julie Workman, and I'm on the Purpich board. I was newly appointed in the first wave of new appointments back in the summer.
And would you go ahead and make your statements in regard to the audit and perhaps the future of Purpich?
Most certainly. I'd like to give you just a short background of my experience in public education. I taught in the Rochester Public Schools from 1974 until 2010 as an orchestra teacher. In 2010, we had some serious problems in our district which needed to be addressed, and we had 15 people running for 4 board seats at that time, and I was elected in 2010. The first order of business we had with 5 new board members out of a total of 7 was to begin a superintendent search. We were quite successful in that. Our next order of business was to gather community members, teachers, and others to form a strategic planning committee to form a 5-year plan for the district. That plan will be under review this spring. I guess what I would really like to say concerning the Purpich Board is that, first of all, I was not involved in any of the previous problems. I do have experience with problem solving, both as a teacher and also as a Rochester School Board member. I'm on my second term, which I ran for unopposed, and I was just elected chair a couple of weeks ago, and this will be my second stint as chair of the board. Coming forth, I think some of the most important things for board members to have is a determination to do the hard work that will be involved with this board. I am very committed to doing so. Three of the tenets that I ran on when I was first elected in 2010 were accountability, communication, and transparency. As one of 15 members on this board, I very much understand that one board member cannot solve all the problems, and that's certainly not what I am intending to say here this morning. There has to be collegiality, there has to be direction, there has to be a sense of purpose, and there has to be a willingness to work together. The ultimate goal is that the needs of the student come first. And it seems to me that the adults have done a pretty good job of making a mess for the needs of the student. I believe that it can be corrected. I have met a number of our new board members. I have read their backgrounds. I think we have a really incredible team coming forth, and speaking for the 9 new board members, I believe that we are all determined to make this work. We see the value of arts education. As a former teacher, I experienced that with Perpich coming down to Rochester to work with music teachers. I understand that there is a very large percentage of students from the metro area who are at Perpich. We need to extend the outreach to outstate Minnesota. The students who are in the area do have other options for arts education in the area. The students in outstate Minnesota do not have that opportunity. If you are coming from a small district, say in western Minnesota, maybe you are one or two, you might be one or two students who are exceptional in the arts, in an area of visual arts, performance arts, and so on. Those students have no cohort they can relate to. They often feel disengaged. They may not be so interested in learning. The Perpich Arts School provides that opportunity for these students to thrive with like-minded students, and I think that is very, very important. The other piece of it with the outreach, Riverside Elementary in Rochester is a turnaround art school, and we had our first experience with that a couple of months ago. I spent the day at Riverside, as did Ben Vanderkoy, and it was remarkable to see an entire staff come together to work to integrate arts into their education, into the education of the students. The response from the students was overwhelming. Now, maybe this might not show up in standardized test scores, but for students to be successful in school, they must be engaged. The arts provide another venue for students to be engaged in school. If students lose this opportunity, then we could be faced with people who are not contributing members of society in the future because they have had no mentoring, they've had no support, and we really, really need that. I certainly believe in arts education for its own value, but at the same time, studies from music certainly have shown that scores can be improved with music training. I'd also like to address, there was a question over here, I believe, about the MCA tests.
Yes.
And why students were maybe not taking the tests. There's a kind of a conundrum with the MCA tests in that It's mandated by the legislature that students take these tests. But also, parents have the right to have their students opt out. So there's a conflict there. You must take the test, but, oh, by the way, you can opt out. In Rochester, we experienced a lot of students opting out of the test, and their reason was that the MCAs come at a really bad time of the year when a lot of students are preparing for AP exams. AP exams directly affect their future. They provide college credit for students. The MCAs are not required for graduation. They don't have a stake in taking them. So who are the students who actually opt out? It's your higher performing students. Then if the school gets a black mark because not enough students have taken a test, but they can opt out, that's legal. If they get a black mark because their scores have gone down, because those who have opted out are usually your higher performing students. So I realize I digress a little bit on this, but in terms of test scores, which are, as you may have noticed, are kind of near and dear to my heart, when you have students coming to a school as juniors in high school, their education has been pretty well set by then. If they are lower performing in math or science, they are not going to catch up in a year. As a matter of fact, and I'm very happy to address this committee on this issue, one of the best things we can do for student success is get them ready for kindergarten, because too many students start behind in kindergarten.
So, Ms. Work,
yes,
no, and they don't close up your remarks,
yes,
and assure us that this board is going to go forth to revive PERPITCH. Do we have your assurances on that? And we'll look forward to hearing a report probably in a month or so about your
great
progress.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Zabel, would you please introduce yourself and make some comments about the administrative management of PERPITCH Center for the Arts?
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mike Zabel, and I'm the interim director for the PERPITCH Center for Arts Education. I'm here with two other members of the transition team. Those team members are Ahava Silky-Jones, principal of the Arts High School, Deborah Kelly, our innovation director, and Ekpe Akpan, who's our HR director. I would like to read a statement, and then we will be available for specific questions from members. The transition team would like to acknowledge the work of the OLA, and we respectfully ask the legislature for some time to allow the PERPITCH Center for Arts Education Board of Directors to complete their search for a new executive director. After that position has been hired, there will be some strategic planning that the board and the executive director will embark on, and then the board and the executive director will set the strategic course for the agency. Until that time, this transition team will continue to keep the day-to-day agency operation running and continue to educate students through both schools and providing professional development to teachers throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zabel. That was very well stated, and thank you for incorporating the two principals. I think we'd like to hear from them as well. So let's turn to the principal of PERPITCH Center first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Will you say your name again? Thank you.
Absolutely. My name is Ahava Silky-Jones, and I am the newly appointed principal of the PERPITCH Arts High School. I came on in August. I have a background in school leadership, and I'm a licensed school administrator, as well as a master's degree in arts and education from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. I come to PERPITCH with the intention of bringing together strong arts leadership, as I have a background in arts administration, as well as school leadership. To speak to many of the points brought up by the committee today, accountability and testing, evaluation and assessment through the arts are also an aspect of my background and something I've been working collaboratively with our staff this year to shape not only the rigor of the work we do, but how we're documenting and demonstrating that work for both internal and public consumption. We have a vibrant, engaged student body, a faculty committed to moving the mission of the PERPITCH Center forward, a faculty that's been there for 20-plus years and is likewise interested in expanding how we reach out to students throughout the state, as well as bring our programming and collaborate with Crosswinds and meeting the mission around developing equitable access, not only to our students, but in artists, incorporating artists into the work that we do. So thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak with you, and for your faith in our ability to move forward with strong leadership and in engaging in the strategic process with our new board members, our parents, families, students, and faculty moving forward.
Thank you, Ms. Silky Jones. And Ms. Kelly, welcome. I'm a little more concerned about Crosswinds. I think we could perhaps salvage Purpich, but this is very concerning. So please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Deborah Kelly. I'm Chief Innovation Officer. And I began at Crosswinds last spring. My role was in developing innovative educational programs, one of which was working on a statewide teacher training institute using arts and equity practices. To your question, because we do have 97% white teachers in Minnesota, our institute, in working with MINEAP and other collaborators, is not addressing the shortage of non-white teachers, but is looking at our current workforce and how we can do a better job of educating our teachers in equity practices through arts education. When the current principal of Crosswinds left in August, I became a leader of the school. I had worked with faculty. We had done a strategic plan for the school in the spring and set up new mission and vision, and started, because my background, I'm a doctoral candidate at the University of Minnesota. My research is with minority audiences and with a minor area in education and innovation in management. Because of the listening session that was held at Crosswinds, I started working with teachers and staff on addressing the issues that had come out last spring. And so we set up new mission and vision, new goals, and all 27 of our staff at Crosswinds had been trained in culturally relevant pedagogy, as well as arts integration, and now all teachers are including arts integration in all subject areas. Madam Chair, I do have a handout that might be helpful in answering a couple of the questions.
Sure. The pages will distribute this handout, please. And we're going to be adjourning in just a couple of minutes.
Sure.
So if you could
I know your comments. I do know a little bit of the history of when Purpich took management of Crosswinds. I did work at Purpich at that time, and so I was involved during that conveyance period, even though I left Purpich for a number of years. When Purpich actually did get conveyed the school, mm-hmm. It was within a couple of weeks of the school opening,
yes.
And it did lose the majority of its teachers and students at that time. So it really has been like starting a new school. And it has been quite bumpy over the past few years, and because of the low student population, and because it's funded through per pupil, it has had real challenges in terms of funding. So this year in October, when we looked at our population, we had, I think we started with 134 students in October, and this is a different population of students,
yes,
than the school when EMID ran the school. We have over 70% students of color. Mm-hmm. We have close to 30% students that require special ed, and then another large percentage on 504 plans.
Wow.
There are over 70% of the students are on free and reduced. And so we have some of the most vulnerable students in the state that attend Crosswinds. And what we have done, we have many new teachers on board this year. We have a new administrator who is both licensed as a superintendent as well as principal. And we have entirely new office personnel. The entire school has gone through training to be more successful. We have set up objectives in six different committees that are working on every aspect of the school in terms of student achievement, culture and climate, the special needs of our students. It's a very, very at-risk population that requires a lot of special services, and we have been looking at how to provide those services. In terms of testing, what we decided to do this fall was give our students the OPA test, mm-hmm. so that we could see where our students are starting out. And if you look at kind of the center of this, you'll see that a huge majority of the students that come to Crosswinds, only 17% of the students started the school year with proficiency in math, and 32% were proficient in reading. What we're finding is that a large majority of students that come to Crosswinds are really in sixth grade, only at the third grade level. And so we have a lot of work to do to bring those students up to proficiency. And then we also have the other end, students who are high-performing students and are coming to the school for the arts or the science. So it's a large job to provide the kind of differentiated education that our students at Crosswinds need. But I think that's also provides an opportunity because of us being an integration magnet and dealing with some of the hardest to reach students. We know through national statistics that arts education has done this and can do that. We also know just in the first quarter of this year, we started arts integration throughout the school. We also started a special enrichment and remedial program in which the seventh period of every day, which is our last period, is a special elective class in which we provide arts and other kinds of science and integrated, special, exciting kinds of programming that has really engaged our students. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we work individually with the students who need remedial help. In the first quarter, the statistics...
Well, Ms. Kelly, yes. Sorry to interrupt you, but we do have to adjourn. Members, this audit report will also be heard in finance probably next week. I'm not sure what Representative Loon has decided as far as timeline, but certainly within the next couple of weeks. And we welcome all of you to return to focus really on the next step. And I think in hearing, Ms. Kelly, your testimony, it really behooves the board to understand what is happening in Crosswinds so that they're addressing this change that has occurred since it was an arts and science school under EMED. This I can hear from you and from the little bit of the audit I've read that this is probably an insurmountable challenge for a school that has relied on a very talented audience in Purpich, and now they have to address the needs you have. So we all have to work together if this is going to be successful. Otherwise, Crosswinds is going to have to take another direction or as Representative Jessup suggested, end its mission and its status as a public school. So thank you very much, members, and we look forward to a continuation of this in the Finance Committee. This meeting is adjourned.